Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Matt Hester welcomes the scripting guy, Ed Wilson, to the show as they discuss Windows Azure Infrastructure Services and PowerShell. Tune in as they chat about some of the potential PowerShell scenarios IT pros can implement in Azure, as well as some tips on how you can get started with Azure and PowerShell today. Matt, the mic is yours.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Matt Hester. Welcome back to this next partner series of Windows Azure and IaaS and you. And today we're going to be talking about PowerShell, and I couldn't think of a better guest to bring on than Ed Wilson. So, Ed, for the folks that don't know who you are, that's maybe like four or five, why don't you tell them a little about who you are, what you do for Microsoft, and we'll get to the get.
Okay, Matt. Thanks for having me. I'm Ed Wilson, and I'm the Microsoft scripting guy. And what that means is that I have the best job at Microsoft. I get paid to talk to customers and to play around with Windows PowerShell. So I write a blog twice a day, actually, that is called the Hey Scripting Guy blog. And I'm actually the only blog at Microsoft that has new content every single day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And like I said, right now it runs twice a day. So in the afternoon I do like a power tip, which is kind of like a really short thing to talk about something cool you can do with Windows PowerShell. And then I've got my longer Hey Scripting Guy blog where, you know, typically, you know, I will spend a week, you know, looking at a particular topic and talking about different ways to do stuff.
So PowerShell is your baby, right? I mean, you say scripting guy. It should be PowerShell scripting guy, right?
Well, yeah, PowerShell scripting guy. But, you know, when I actually took the position, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, then, you know, PowerShell was just coming out, and the original scripting guys, and that's why it's actually referred to as scripting guys, is there used to be like five of them, and now it's just me. But the original scripting guys, they were all writing about VBScript and stuff. And so the first few articles that I wrote, I also wrote about using VBScript. But then I quickly made the transition over to only writing about PowerShell. But, you know, that kind of took, I say quickly, I mean, that took like about a year or so. I mean, yeah, I would run PowerShell articles 5 days a week. And then kind of on the weekend, you know, then I would have some stuff about VBScript. So I kind of transitioned away from it. But when I started looking at that, I mean, the scripting guys had like 5 years of content about VBScript. I mean, so there was like, you know, 12 or 1,300 articles about using VBScript to manage Windows. And you know as well as I do, Matt, that we have not added anything to VBScript since Windows XP. Yeah, so yeah. It's been a long time since we've done anything with VBScript.
Well, and that's what, you know, I want to bring it up because when we talk about PowerShell, and you and I have talked about this in other interviews, has grown leaps and bounds over the, really, I mean, we're in our third version right now, and we just seem to be, you know, going over tenfold over the types of commandlets. Every product that corporate seems to have PowerShell in it nowadays. So if you're an IT pro and you're not learning PowerShell, you're missing out on a big part of the automation that we can do inside of our environments, right?
Oh, absolutely, but, you know, it's actually more than that. So, I mean, PowerShell 1 had 129 commandlets. Yeah, that was it, 129 commandlets. And then in PowerShell 2, you know, we bumped that up to like 229 commandlets. So, I mean, we almost doubled the number of commandlets. But in Windows 8 and on Windows Server 2012 with PowerShell 3, you know, we're up over 2,000. So, yeah, it's a tenfold increase. And the thing is that these are new commandlets that are coming from our different teams. So this is becoming the management tool of choice. And it is just so much easier to make your life so much easier. So, for instance, a typical VBScript, you know, that returns information about volumes on your laptop. That VBScript would be probably around 12 to 15 lines long of code. And with PowerShell 3 on Windows 8, it's one line, it's one command, get volume.
And
that's it, just get dash volume. you know, and you can tab complete. So you type GET-V and press tab, and you've got your command, you know, and as opposed to typing 15 lines of code.
And well, and that's the one thing I think people that are starting to understand are starting to realize that it's not only, I mean, get volume, it kind of makes sense. It's kind of almost like a real easy way to read a language, but it's also more powerful. So, yeah, I run into VBScript programmers all the time. I'm like, hey, look, have you looked at PowerShell? And we're starting to get into that wave, and the fact that it's grown as much as it has, as quick as it has, and it's been contributed by the community and our product groups. And really, when you look at all of our products, PowerShell, I mean, I don't know if it's a shipping requirement, but I think it almost should be, right? If you don't support PowerShell, you can't get out the door.
It's part of the common engineering criteria.
Oh, so it is a shipping requirement. Outstanding. Yeah, so, folks, our products are going to get it built in. Now, Ed, over the next 20 minutes, is going to cover over all 2,000 of the PowerShell commandlets for us, right?
Dude, I guess I'd better go get a cup of coffee if we're going to do that.
No, just kidding. Today what we're going to talk about, and this is what it shouldn't surprise anybody, is when we talk about Windows Azure, and the series we've been talking about Windows Azure is the focus on PowerShell. Really, when we think about IaaS and we think about what's there, PowerShell was just a natural extension. So what are some of the things that you've been seeing with Windows Azure and PowerShell that's been out in the wild? I mean, it almost seems like once you get inside the systems, it's just PowerShell, the same as always. But what are some of those Windows Azure-specific things that we've seen with PowerShell or even some of those other cloud-specific things that we've seen with Azure and PowerShell?
Well, before we get to that, Matt, one of the things that you need to understand is that in PowerShell 2, we introduced PowerShell remoting. Yeah, yeah. And that runs over the WinRM protocol. And so that makes it really easy for me to connect to a remote system. So if we go back to that 15-line VB script that got, say, volume information, you know, sometimes that would work, sometimes it wouldn't work. And it says, well, you know, what's the security configuration that's set on that remote machine? Yeah, is it a member of the domain? Is it a member of a work group? Does it have the firewall running on it? You know, is firewall running on your machine or not? I mean, yeah, there was at least a dozen different configuration issues that you had to look at in order to try to make the stupid thing work. It was a major pain trying to troubleshoot that stuff, you know, and I actually really hated those types of questions because I had to understand the environment of that remote network better than the person who was having the problems. Because to be honest, if the person that was having the problems really understood everything about their network, then they wouldn't be running into those type of issues. So it was horrible to try to troubleshoot. With Windows PowerShell 2, we introduced WinRM and PowerShell remoting. It's an industry standard protocol that allows me to reach out and connect to other machines. Now, with PowerShell 3 on Windows Server 2012, WinRM is already set up, configured, and it is already working. It's turned on by default on the server. On the client, it's not. Now, the reason that I wanted to back up a little bit on this is because that once we have this ability and a standard protocol to be able to reach out and to talk and to administer these other machines, it doesn't matter if that machine is on the other side of my office, the other side of my house, the other side of the world, or guess what, Matt, if it's in the cloud.
Yep, and that's awesome because I hadn't thought of it that way because I know, yeah, PowerShell 2, that was one of the big things that we had with enable PowerShell remoting and be able to do things across the different servers. And, yeah, now it makes sense that that's there. And one of the things that we just added, and I don't know how much you get up into the cloud, and I think it was added like last week. I was going through provisioning a new server inside of Windows Azure IaaS. And, folks, you're going to see this now when you go up to Azure and provision your new servers. At the very end of the wizard, there's a little checkbox that says enable PowerShell remoting. So it sounds like even the folks at corporate and the folks in Azure are now giving us the abilities that, hey, we can actually check that box. And what it does in Azure is it actually creates that endpoint so that we can, from on-premise essentially, be able to reach in and configure those machines from a PowerShell remoting perspective.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. You know, so it is that endpoint that allows us to be able to, you know, I hate to use the word magic, but it is the ability to allow us to quickly and easily be able to reach out and to touch that remote machine. Yeah, now the neat thing about that is also in PowerShell 3, we introduced new commandlets that allow me to easily create and configure custom endpoints. And so if I've got my Azure running up there in the cloud, so we've got this maybe remote office, and in this remote office is a part-time IT person. Part-time meaning part-time manager for the small remote office, part-time help desk support IT guy, changes the tapes for the backup or something, who knows what, I've seen all kinds of squirrely stuff like that. So this part-time person, you give them the ability to run a couple of commandlets. So they want to check, to check the utilization. They want to check, how much, people are doing this, that, or the other, how much disk space they have allocated, for whatever. And we can easily do this by creating a custom endpoint that would allow that person to only be able to go up there and run that one commandlet. And using PowerShell, because we have the .NET framework, accessible to us, running that one commandlet can even be put into a graphical form that this person double clicks, and it launches this graphical form with one big red button and one big green button. The green button says push me. You push it and it does whatever you need it to do, and then it just throws the information back out into a nice HTML report or what have you.
Down the rabbit hole we go, right?
Absolutely. The red button, of course, isn't wired up to anything, but you like to give people choices.
it doesn't do anything. It makes a click noise and doesn't actually set up. But that, I think that's the thing that people don't realize, is that a lot of especially a lot of the GUI interfaces that we use today, even on our core server, when we add a role, or if you're, if you're going through the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, at the very end of all these, view script, and it's all PowerShell. So we have all these pretty GUI interfaces that give us all these wonderful things that we can do on our servers, but at the end of the day, it's PowerShell that's doing all the heavy lifting under the covers.
Server Manager, Windows Server 2012, that is PowerShell.
Yep, and trust me, everybody loves Server Manager 2012.
It's awesome.
So when we talk about PowerShell, I mean, you brought up an interesting point, especially when in regards to the endpoints. What I see some of our customers doing, especially with the way the endpoints work, if they don't have the ability to set up a site-to-site VPN and kind of have that, permanent on-premise to Azure kind of connection, which is a great thing if you can do it, what they'll use PowerShell for is they'll actually use PowerShell to create the endpoint, do their work, and then use PowerShell to close that endpoint. So they actually raise and lower the drawbridge in and out of their Azure cloud services just using a very simple PowerShell. It's two lines of PowerShell. It's really nothing special.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually one of the really cool things to do, as a matter of fact, is that, using Windows PowerShell, I can easily, make a change that permits me to go in and configure the machine, and then I can undo that change that kind of locks it back down. I've seen people actually do this with, with turning on script support, for instance, and then disabling script support. Set script execution policy, disable script execution policy. So I've seen people that would kind of do some stuff like that. And you might wonder how it's done. Well, it's done because I can run PowerShell commands individually. So I can, put this stuff in a batch file and run PowerShell commands if I want to. Or I can use a scheduled service to run a series of PowerShell commands. So I use PowerShell space, and then I give it the name of the command that I want to run, and so now I actually have something I can put in a batch file. So when we're talking about, a lot of times when you talk about people that do PowerShell, they get really excited, and they get really out there. And the reason is, and they'll say, well, PowerShell can do anything. And people begin to wonder, do you know what you're talking about? Yeah, but the thing is that PowerShell really and truly can do anything. Anything I can do on a computer, just about, I can do with PowerShell. And the reason is because I have access to all the underlying technology.
Yep.
I've got some articles on the Scripting Guide blog where we're calling, unmanaged C++ code. I mean, native Win32 APIs. And if you can do that, you can do anything.
Yeah, one, it's just what I tell folks from an IT perspective is PowerShell speaks WMI. And if I can speak WMI, there isn't a single thing I can't find out about that system. Now, it might take a little work to get inside of that because WMI can be a bit hairy, but that's the kind of stuff that I think people are starting to realize. You know, why did we increase tenfold over the, you know, the command list? Why did we give Azure the ability to do this? And, folks, when we're talking about Azure support and PowerShell, I'm talking about just the Azure portal itself. You know, when you provision those servers that are up in that environment for you to work with it, once you're inside that Windows Server 2012, you have whatever native PowerShell supports there. But the PowerShell support that we're talking about today is being able to work with inside of that portal to not only provision endpoints, but you can provision systems. So, Ed, probably in your experience, you've had to see a lot of kind of, or hopefully you've seen some really neat things. I know one of my teammates, Young, actually did a really good script that actually provisioned two web servers and a SQL box and stood them all up, load balanced them, and set them all up inside of it. What are some of the things you've seen that kind of went, oh, hadn't thought of using PowerShell for that with Azure?
That's actually kind of a little hard because I think of doing a lot of stuff with that.
All right, so what is the thing that, you know, somebody else came up to you and you had already thought of it? Wow, I didn't think that person would think of it.
well, one of the things that's actually really cool, you know, is that so you kind of, a lot of people kind of think about, you know, Azure as being something that's kind of like nebulous, you know, it's kind of like up in the cloud or something, you know, and they don't think of these as like being real servers, you know, or something like that, you know, but once we have PowerShell inside and with access to the .NET framework, with access to WMI, with access to the various APIs and stuff, you know, even access to the old VBScript COM interfaces, you know, once you have access to all that stuff, you can literally do anything, you know, and it's actually kind of interesting that sometimes we talk about private cloud as, well, running virtual machines on Hyper-V in some kind of a situation like that. And, yeah, those are real servers. You know, Azure is a real server. Yeah, and once we have this endpoint, then one of the things you can do is you can easily begin to script and anything that you can do on a physical machine, you can reach out and do with your Azure instances. Yeah, and so you store that endpoint in a variable in your script, and then it's just like you're running it against your local computer.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing is that, once again, when we talk about it, when I think of private cloud, I think of private cloud, it's really not about being on-premise or in the cloud. It's about an automation process. It's more of how you do things inside of a data center and how do you automate that process. And PowerShell is definitely a big part of that because, you know, if I'm an IT infrastructure and I have Azure as one of the tools in my tool belt and I have a whole bunch of virtual servers sitting in my tool belt and, you know, somebody comes across the wire and says, hey, I need to provision a system, I should have an ability to whether I PowerShell script them and have that provisioned up in the cloud because that fits their need or whatever that app's going to do, or have that environment provisioned on-premise. It's going to look almost the same, except for the funness that is setting up Azure and the actual portal and getting all the certificates in line and getting your subscription and IDs set up. So we have that kind of that form of trust with our Azure, because that's one thing that threw me the first thing. I could PowerShell inside the virtual machines really well, but getting that initial, okay, how do I get PowerShell to work, I was kind of surprised it didn't auto-load the PowerShell commandlets, quite frankly, Ed. I mean, why didn't we build the PowerShell Azure commands into my Windows 8 system?
Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, and that's one thing once you download those tools and get them all configured, then it's just PowerShell. Now you have all these Azure kind of specific PowerShell things that we can do, whether it's, you know, even this RIS things, but also some of the PaaS stuff as well. So when folks are getting ready to use Azure and PowerShell, or even PowerShell in general, what are some of the, besides reading your blog, which, by the way, folks, if you don't read it, he mentioned at the top, it is excellent, has a lot of great content. What are some other things that you recommend when people first start dipping their toes into working with PowerShell and maybe some advice when they start working with Azure and PowerShell?
Well, if you're first starting out with PowerShell, definitely the best place to go is my blog, you know, the Script Center. It's the number one, you know, PowerShell destination on the Internet. And I've got a series of videos there. You know, Learn PowerShell Now Before It's an Emergency that I did. It was like one of the top video series on TechNet. And, you know, so I've got 10 hours of training videos that go over the basics of using Windows PowerShell. Now, don't go over any, you know, Azure or remoting, but I do go over basic PowerShell. Now, the thing that you've got to remember is PowerShell is PowerShell is PowerShell. It doesn't matter if I'm doing PowerShell in Active Directory, PowerShell in SQL, PowerShell in Exchange, or PowerShell Azure, it's still PowerShell. It all looks, it all feels, it all acts exactly the same. You know, that was the goal, so that you're not having to relearn a new management tool each time. You know, one of our big shortcomings in the past was that every time I wanted to administer a different type of system, I had to learn a new management tool. And it got even worse than that. I remember when I was doing Exchange a long time ago. I mean, between Exchange 4, Exchange 5, Exchange 5.5, Exchange 2000, every version changed the management tool. So whereas I understood the basic Exchange technology, yeah, I was spending a lot of time going back and relearning how to do my job because I had to relearn this GUI interface. And in PowerShell, you don't have that. I mean, you know, you want to create a new user, it's new AD user. It has been ever since the commandlet came out, and it's not going to change.
Yeah, and that's the best thing about that. And you start off with that tip, and I'm glad you went there. And I was kind of hoping that's exactly where you'd go, is because when we talk with folks and they see all these commandlets, it can be a bit overwhelming. You know, especially if somebody's never touched PowerShell before, you know, we see over 2,000 commandlets in the Windows 8 or Windows 2012, plus you add in Azure, and, oh, if they have Office 365, there's commandlets here and there's commandlets on the right, the left, they're everywhere. You know, it can be overwhelming, but what I always try to start with is just the basics. You know, learn how to read a commandlet, you know, what get service. And my favorite one I always saw, because and this one you taught me, Ed, that I still demo today and people love it, is I think whenever people run PowerShell for the first time or they create that script that's going to solve world peace or whatever it's going to do for the organization, they kind of have almost that buyer's remorse or that buyer beware, heart rate kind of goes up, they get a little nervous, they're not quite sure what it's going to go to do. But one of the commandlets that I still do and one of the switches you taught me a long time ago that I'll still use is what if. You can always ask PowerShell, what is going to happen to me if I run this command? What if or confirm are your friends, folks. And if you're not sure what those are, I'm sure Ed's talked about them because he's the one that taught me to, and if not, I can point you to it, because it's one of those things you have to learn how to protect yourself, because PowerShell will do what it does. It'll do what you tell it to do, but you want to be careful and test these types of things. But what if, I'll tell you, this is one of the best things, and that is everywhere. You know, it's one of my favorite switches to use.
Yeah, anything that's going to change your system state, And it's really, really good because it becomes a good learning opportunity for you. So you might type git process and then pipe it to stop process. Now, before you press enter, hit dash what if to see what it's actually going to do. Now, as a matter of fact, since this is a Microsoft thing, we could think of at least three or four logical behaviors that would happen if I type git process, pipe it to stop process. You know, we might get a prompt, you know, that says, you know, are you sure you want to do this? It might fail and say unable to determine which process to stop. I mean, that would be logical. It may just give you an access denied. You know, but as a matter of fact, it doesn't do anything. It stops every process on your computer, and it'll actually shut down your laptop. I mean, I used to demo that in class, like right before we go to lunch. You know,
yeah, that's why you don't do it in the first in the morning.
Yeah, because, you know, my laptop's so slow. I mean, it takes it a while to kind of load it up. I mean, I used to be able to get my VAX back online faster than I get my laptop.
Well, that's why we go to the cloud now. You can blow up those servers up there, and they just...
Absolutely. But you see, that's the same thing. Those things work in the cloud as well. Yeah. You know, yep. So if I need to make a configuration change, you know, in the cloud, you know, that hey, what happens if I do, you know, if I format this drive, you know? Well, now if you're talking about the classic format command, dude, you're out of luck. It don't have what if.
No, yeah, it does.
I'm trying to call the format method from the 132 underscore volume WMI class. Well, you can use what if. So this is one of these things in which, you know, you get an awful lot of advantage, you know, for just kind of changing some of your old standard type behaviors. Now, it's not that, like, you know, these old commands that are necessarily bad, but with PowerShell, they're just so much better. So you want to be learning your PowerShell equivalent commands, you know, as you have time. And the neat thing about that is that it's as you have time. Yeah, so you don't have to go back and rewrite all of your old batch files and all of your old scripts and stuff like that. They'll still work, but as you need to do new things, do those in PowerShell.
Yeah, and well, and that's one thing I talk to IT pros about. Azure IaaS, it's out. It's in general availability. It's something you can use for your production environments. You can extend resources to it. And I think sometimes folks forget, I think one of the more common things, and I use it almost daily, Azure is a great test bed, and when you think about a language like PowerShell, I always joke with the folks when I teach them PowerShell, say, look, if you don't test your scripts before you run them in production and something bad happens, I'm going to come take your IT Pro card away. And how I position Azure for those folks is, hey, what a better way to test an environment in a simple environment where I can spin up a server in a few minutes, test my scripts, see what it's going to do before I actually implement it into my on-premise production environment.
Yeah, that's a really great idea, Matt. As a matter of fact, we did something like this with the PowerShell user group in Charlotte a couple months ago. And this was not my idea. It was PowerShell MVP Jim Christopher's idea. So everybody was wanting to practice working with Active Directory commandlets. And I'm thinking, old school here. Okay, oh my gosh, this is gonna be a pain in the butt. I'm gonna have to, give these guys, three or four different virtual machines and worry that they've got 20 gigabytes of free disk space and 30 gig of free memory and and then have to walk some of these people through setting up Hyper-V on their laptops. All this, it's gonna be a nightmare. And in just about the amount of time that I was like, dreading stuff, Jim had gone off and created an Azure instance with Active Directory running. I mean, it was like that quick, And they said, okay, so now let's do it. Yeah. I mean, and it was literally, it was that fast. And even if you do have the Hyper-V infrastructure, at home, to build these test machines, and with Windows 8, I mean, we've got Hyper-V installed on everything now, so it's just really cool. My wife's new laptop has 32 gig of RAM running Windows 8, and I configured Hyper-V on it. I'm not sure she'll need it or not, but hey, it's an awesome machine.
You lost me at 32 gigs of RAM. I'm still thinking about that. Hang on. All right. I know you talked about PowerShell. After. What was that after 32 gigs of RAM? You lost me.
So that's Teresa's computer. But the thing is, that if I want to do to create a new virtual machine, I loop in my ISO, and I do all this. I go clicky clicky clicky. Or even if I run a bunch of PowerShell scripts, I'm looking at 20 or 30 minutes to do the install to create this, and then I've got to go in and configure it. Whereas with Azure, I mean, it's like click, 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 boom, go get a cup of coffee, come back, and I'm done. And so I can be so much more productive using Azure than I can using, on-premise virtual machines for testing.
Yeah, and that's where I think it just provides a wonderful opportunity. So when we talk about PowerShell, a couple of things you've said today, folks, and I want to make sure that that these are very clear. Learn the basics of PowerShell, because one of the things that I can't stress to you enough is that, Azure's new, and it's generally new in IaaS, but it's still PowerShell, folks. And as Ed mentioned, PowerShell is PowerShell, and I'll make sure we get the links in this posting to his video series so you can learn the basics of the language. And even though we've changed the language, the language hasn't changed. I don't know when Ed did those videos. Ed, when did you create those videos on the PowerShell before it's an emergency?
Last year and the year before.
So you did update
the PowerShell 2 version.
Oh, but they're PowerShell 2, and that's a beautiful thing, and they still apply. So even
Absolutely.
If we have other versions of PowerShell, like we get PowerShell 5000 coming out in the next couple of years, it's going to be PowerShell. It's going to be the same core language. And so whether you're provisioning Azure machines or provisioning on-premise, folks, it is PowerShell is PowerShell. And I love the other tip that you put in was as you're using PowerShell or as you're using the GUI, learn what the PowerShell equivalent is. You click on a bunch of boxes and it did something. How did that actually occur? Especially if you're using Server Manager in 2012, use it. Learn PowerShell when you can. That way you can just build that background. So what other tips can we provide to folks out there that you've found that people have just fallen in love with?
Well, one of the other things is that you need to learn how to use, you know, Git command. And I use this all the time, as well as Git help, for instance. So for instance, I'm looking for a power tip, that I'm going to put in my blog. Well, then what I do is I use Git command. Yeah. And I send it to more. And so I can page through my command list and look until I find something that looks interesting. And then once I've found something that looks interesting, then I send it to Git help. And then I look and I read about that particular commandlet. And then I say, well, this is cool. And then I write up my power tip. I mean, that's how I do it. I do this every single day. So I'm constantly using Git command. Now, I will give you this trick. Now, this is a cool trick. Matter of fact, I had this as a power tip a couple months ago, but I'll mention it to you anyway for free. If you're on PowerShell 3, we do automatic loading of modules, and this is really, really important because there's dozens and dozens and dozens of modules, and you can't remember which module contains which command.
I thought you had that built in, Ed.
Yeah, which is what you have to do in PowerShell 2. I mean, you've got to know which module has which command, you know, in order to be able to use it. You know, so in PowerShell 3, it's impossible to remember that. So what I do, but we load these things on demand. So if I'm using Git command, when I just open PowerShell on PowerShell 3, then I'm not going to see all my commands. And so what I do is I load every module. So I take Git module dash list, and then I pipe it to import module, and then I press enter. Wait less than a minute, and it's loaded all of these dozens and dozens of modules with all of these 2,000 and some commands. And then now I could use Git command and say I'm looking for something that has a noun of, yeah, let's just say adapter. You know, whether it's a NET adapter, a SAN adapter, you know, a video adapter, who knows? But let's just look for stuff related to adapters. And so I can use wildcard. So I can say Git command dash noun star adapter star, press enter, and it'll go off and it'll find stuff.
Yep.
But the thing is, the key here is to make sure that you load all of your modules first.
Yeah, because with auto loading, you're not going to get them. But you know, auto loading kind of almost makes it a bit lazy. But that's how you can learn it. I think I had a flashback to my childhood, Ed, when you said, "Hey, that's how I learned my command list." I'm thinking, how does Ed know all 2,000 commands? I mean, how did he do that? And he just picks one. It reminds me of the dictionary. I mean, and how you had to go through the dictionary to learn the different words and the definitions. I had to do that when I was a kid. And I'm thinking, I never even thought of that with PowerShell. The thing about that I would tell folks though is when you do this, you know, even though you can load all the modules, it's a great way to start, especially if you want to look at the whole dictionary. When you look at it from a job perspective, pick the area that you're working in or that you're most passionate about and start with those commandlets. And I think it's one of those things that ball will gather steam in a hurry. It's like a snowball rolling downhill. Is once you get that basic core foundation, you can take after that and then really blossom out, kind of like what you've done, Ed, with just everything you've done with PowerShell.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. You know that. So, you know, from your perspective, as somebody that's new coming, and I'm not saying you, Matt. I mean, you wrote a really good book on PowerShell. But yeah, from a listener's perspective who is coming to PowerShell, then the first thing you want to do is use Git module dash list to see what modules are available. Now, the modules have decent names, so some of them will say like, you know, storage. Some of them will say like networking or something. Some of them will say firewall or what have you. And those are pretty good. Some of them say Active Directory. Well, if you're an AD kind of guy or gal, then you're going to want to use the Active Directory module. So then load the Active Directory module, then use Git command to search through the commandlets that are available in that particular module. And I do that as well. So you want to get familiar with using these commandlets. You know, Git module, you know, so that you can find the modules, import module to import them, Git command so you can look through the commands, Git help so that you can get familiar with those particular things. A lot of people recommend Git member as another basic commandlet. Yep. I don't. I mean, to me, that's more of an advanced type of commandlet. I mean, you can do an awful lot of work using the commandlets and the switches that are available on those commandlets, you know, and not have to drop down to the underlying .NET objects. You know, an awful lot of work.
So, yeah, and what I do for my job, I like Git Member for one thing, and I don't run into this as much as I used to, but when PowerShell first came out, I'd run into a lot of my friends who are developers, and they'd be like, oh, you're using that kiddie language. And then I would show them Git Member, and it would make them go away. I mean, it'd just be a standpoint of, hey, look, this is what it, oh, and then all of a sudden PowerShell became a tool that wasn't just an IT pro thing. There was a language that developers speak, and I think the .NET underneath it makes it that kind of that common tool.
I use Git Member every day. I don't use GitHelp that much anymore. I mean,
really?
I've written five books.
Okay, so I'm just saying. I mean, you could write the help. It's one of those things for me. Because I don't have your knowledge base in that area, and I wrote the book at that basic level, right? I wanted to make sure people knew how to read the language at a core level because people were afraid of it. I don't see the fear in people's eyes of PowerShell anymore. I now almost see a resignation, like, oh, great, I got to learn PowerShell now. But they used to be afraid of it. They're not afraid of it as much as they used to be anymore. But I think that's the key thing is you learn that core, then you can learn how to go do whatever you need to do, and it's just a matter of finding that reason to do it. And one of the things I'd recommend folks is, especially with Ed and his blog, but the scripting center he talked about and the scripting repository that were out there. And I kind of try to hit Ed, you know, hey, Ed, tell me something that surprises you. And the reason I bring that up now is that when you think about scripts and you think about your environment, chances are, folks, that somewhere out there somebody has already thought of that script and it's possibly in our scripting repository to use, even if it's in Azure. I've seen some of the Azure scripts pop up in there to do things that are just wonderfully powerful, for lack of a better word, that we can do now in PowerShell. So don't forget to learn how to use the community that's out there and some of the stuff that's out there for us to look at to learn the language. It can help, you know, alleviate that down cart so you can get to the point where Ed is and you don't need help anymore. As long as you know how to read the language, folks, it will serve you for many, many years.
Yeah, absolutely. The Scripting Guy Script Repository has over 5,000 scripts in it, and VBScript, PowerShell, you know, JScript, Perl, I mean, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, PowerShell specific, there's nearly 2,500 scripts that are exactly PowerShell scripts. And it's the largest collection of PowerShell scripts on the internet, and there's a lot of really, really good stuff there. And you're absolutely right. You know, you're probably not going to need to have to write a whole lot of scripts. And that's actually the good thing in PowerShell 3 on Windows 8 and on Windows Server 2012 is you're not going to have to write a whole lot of scripts. I mean, you can get some very, very powerful stuff done, you know, by just putting together two or three commandlets, you know, using the pipeline. And, you know, we refer to them as one-liners. And sometimes it's one logical line that might be three or four printed lines, but it's still a one-liner.
The pipe symbol's our friend.
The pipe symbol's your friend. You know, if that scares you, leave the pipe on the right and then just press enter, you know. And the neat thing about the PowerShell console, yeah, is that it continues until you double-click it, so to speak. I mean, so I press enter twice, then it'll go ahead and run the command. But if I type something that's a partial command, press enter, then I get double arrows. So it's like next, next, next. We do this on purpose to allow you to create some pretty complex commands interactively on the fly, and be able to still have something that's somewhat readable. If you don't like that approach, use the ISE. You don't have to write a script in the ISE. You can simply use it as a better PowerShell console, and work interactively from it.
Well, it's funny. You might laugh at this, but the fact that we put IntelliSense in there, people absolutely love. And then the other one that I show, and especially with PowerShell 3, is the command add-on. But I can't remember who it was in my room. The name is going through my head. But he was a PowerShell MVP. Oh, I'm going to remember it one of these days. Oh, I can't remember his name. But anyways, when I showed the command add-on, he said I was cheating because I was just basically filling the dialog box that moved my PowerShell command. I'm like, that's not cheating. It's built into the tool. It's legal.
That's funny. That's cheating. That's cool. So that's the secret PowerShell cheat tool.
Oh, so you're calling me a great. Now, I like the tool. It saves. I hate to type in front of public. I mean, when you're doing live demos and you're doing live PowerShell demos, it's almost you have to practice your scripts over and over and over again typing in front of people, because typing in front of people is different, folks, than when you're typing in the confines of your own office.
That's true. I like to use the PowerShell add-on when I'm teaching, because it's a good way to show people all the different parameters and stuff, and actually say, okay, well, this and this, you know, and then I can show them the command, and then I can also run the command, you know. So yeah, it's a good teaching tool, and it's really a nice tool for people that are really afraid of trying to type and use IntelliSense and stuff like that, you know. But the other thing that's useful that I like is it becomes like a floating help, because it shows me all of my available parameters.
Yep, and that's the one thing, because there are so many things that sometimes we don't always see inside of it. So, Ed, I want to say thank you for taking time out of your busy day to come to and talk to us on even our Azure series on PowerShell. Any last tidbits that you can share with folks about Azure and IaaS and PowerShell specifically?
Well, there's a number of CodePlex projects. You should definitely go and look at those. Go to CodePlex and just type in PowerShell and Azure. Yeah, and IaaS, and you'll find it. And there's some really good projects there. You know, the stuff that you find on CodePlex, they're kind of like scripts that have gone to the next level. So these become actually more polished tools. And the other thing is that, you know, you can contact people that own these CodePlex projects. And a lot of times they're really happy to listen from you and for you to hear from you. The last thing I talk about, you know, from a PowerShell in general perspective, if you're coming to PowerShell, you may want to check out my book, PowerShell Step by Step, which is a new book came out from MS Press about a month or two ago. And personally, I think it's probably the best book on PowerShell, but that's just me, you know. check it out yourself, see what you think. If you like it, write a review on it.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time today, Ed, and thank you everybody for tuning in and learning more about PowerShell and Azure. Thanks everybody, and have a great day.